Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Monday, May 20th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
All right, Ryan, let's just jump right in here. Tell me what happened at the box office this past weekend.
Yeah, so it was, you know, Ben, would you believe me if I told you it was a disappointing weekend at the box office?
Unfortunately, I would.
Yeah, that's where we're at right now. Yeah, you and I had a conversation at the end of last week that was like, I had sort of been speaking about things in a way that was like, maybe. And you're like, no, I think we've arrived at the point of it's happening. Just we need to make our peace with it. And so, yeah, so John Krasinski's If, which is a big family-friendly animated movie, CGI animated live-action hybrid movie, topped the box office with $35 million domestically. You know, not bad for an original family-friendly type movie. It also made $24 million internationally for a $59 million worldwide launch. The problem is the movie cost $110 million to make. Certain tracking had suggested it could go as high as $40 million, which would have been a little better, obviously. But yeah, it's okay. It's kind of in the same range as Free Guy, which opened at $28.3 million in August of 2021 under pandemic circumstances. That movie went on to make $331 million worldwide. So if can kind of hang around, you know, do some international numbers, it could wind up in a similar range, assuming mm-hmm. Paramount keeps it in theaters long enough to allow for that to happen. You know, which would mean the movie itself would be okay. And, you know, that's assuming a decent hold, all these other things. Critics were mixed on it. It did get an A cinema score. That's more important for audience retention. So, again, it's like a situation where the individual movie's okay, but, you know, we're in a situation where the total domestic box office once again failed to crack $100 million for the whole chart. The last time we had a weekend where the total domestic box office was over $100 million was back on March 29th, the weekend that Godzilla vs. X Kong opened. So for all of April and May so far, we have not had a single domestic box office weekend where everything totaled $100 million or more. That's the problem. You know, so if despite being an okay-ish opening, not doing a lot to help the broader cause here.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess, are there any other takeaways from If that you can glean from these numbers?
Unfortunately, no. Like I said, the movie itself is probably going to be fine. That is assuming that, you know, again, Paramount keeps it in theaters long enough. It doesn't fall off a cliff next weekend. And, you know, but I think it'll be okay. But yeah, it's just like, it is one of those things that what we're missing is like the big blockbuster that If opened with, right? Like it almost feels like there's an $80 million opener that opened on the same weekend as If, but mm-hmm. that $80 million opener isn't here. That's what's sort of missing right now, which is, you know, pretty problematic, but
yeah, there's like an unanswerable question that I have, which is, are studios not okay with these numbers, but sort of like factoring in all of these circumstances that we keep talking about on the show over and over again into these numbers and like, and into their decisions about what to make moving forward. Cause that's a huge part of why we care so much about this stuff is like, you know, it establishes baselines, it establishes comps for studios to measure against when they're deciding on new stuff that we potentially might love, you know? So does this say anything about the about Hollywood's willingness to make sort of family-friendly live-action animation hybrids? I don't know. I mean, like I said, it seems like it's sort of an unanswerable question right now.
It is a little bit, but it does. I think that depends on the long tail of this movie. I think if this movie gets to, let's say it gets to 300 million worldwide, I think that's enough for like Paramount and other studios to be like, okay, like with the right concept, we can totally get there. Because I think like, this movie was probably made based on the idea that Free Guy did well, you know, and because that was really the most direct comp that I could find in like the pandemic era, basically. And yeah, I think that like, you know, you do need it can't all just be pre-existing stuff. So I think that it's important that studios keep investing in this stuff because like if does well enough, you could turn this into a franchise, you know, you maybe get like an animated series on Netflix or something like whatever, you know, there's a way to spin this where you're generating IP. You can't just be reusing the same thing. So I think that the studios are keenly aware that you need to do that, but the economics still need to work out for that first installment. And I think that this is definitely one where like, if it does well enough, it could be like a net positive in the end. It's just that in the broader conversation right now, it doesn't necessarily help matters. So it's easy to feel down on it, but like this goes back to the thing we were talking about where all these movies this summer now are taking on more responsibility than they should have to is kind of the problem.
So what other box office stories caught your attention?
Yeah. So I'm encouraged by Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. It did drop 55% domestic, but it is at 237.5 worldwide right now. It already crossed 100 million domestic. It's holding well. It's doing well. It's finding its audience. It shouldn't have an issue getting to around 400 worldwide, which I think would be what Disney would need to call that a success. And I think that could be a launching pad for the next installment, which I believe could be a breakout sequel, depending on how that goes. So I mean, I continue to be encouraged by that. I think the one that perplexed me the most this weekend was The Strangers Chapter 1. That was one of the other big new releases. So that came in at number 3. It made $12 million. For those who don't remember, The Strangers was a home invasion horror movie directed by Brian Bertino back in 2008. It has since become sort of a home invasion classic of the genre. It was a solid hit in its day. Well, so the idea is Lionsgate made 3 of these movies, filmed them all at once under director Renny Harlin. And so as the title Chapter 1 implies, this is the first chapter of a 3-movie series, all of which will hit theaters within the span of a year, a little less than a year, I believe. So this movie on its own terms did okay. It made $12 million domestic against a reported $8.5 million budget. My assumption with that budget is that it was like probably a $25 million budget for the trilogy. And so you just divide that up. Mm-hmm. The problem is it got a C cinema score. It has a 13% on Rotten Tomatoes. Nobody seems to like this movie. Like even
Jacob liked it. He talked about it a little bit on, I think it was Friday's episode, but yeah, he seems like the lone voice in the crowd that I've heard anyway.
But even Jacob wasn't like effusive about it, right? Like Jacob was like, It's fine. And I think like what a lot of people are saying, if you've seen the original Strangers, it feels incredibly redundant. I do think that there's a percentage of the audience that might not have seen that movie. They might think this is a prequel. I don't know. But so I think like taking on its own terms, this movie seems to be doing okay. You know, 12 against an 8.5 budget is fine. But you're relying on retaining that audience for Chapter 2 and Chapter 3. And I think all of the metrics we have right now indicate that's going to be difficult. So, you know, and the other problem with like, you're not just investing you're not trying to pay for a $25 million movie. You have to market 3 different movies and each marketing campaign is expensive. So I think that's where this gets tricky. You know, it might help if Chapter 2, like the reviews are much better and like maybe, you know, this trilogy hits its stride in the second and third chapters, but that still gets tricky to convince audiences that were turned off by this one to be like, okay, let's go give the second one a chance. So good that we got the $12 million out of it this weekend. Kind of bad for the larger picture, unfortunately.
I have to wonder if Lionsgate knew that this was going to be more of a VOD play for them than a theatrical thing. And they just did the thing that you've been saying, you know, for years, which is like, put your movies in theaters regardless and like just make whatever you can there. And then, you know, make the majority of what you're going to make or whatever on video. That seems like sort of something that the Lionsgate folks would be doing right now. Does that seem like it would come out of their playbook at this point, given what you know about them?
The Lionsgate is good at making money. I'll say that much. Like let me say this. Lionsgate is pretty good at not losing money. Like even like these big flops they've been associated with, they only have like a nominal investment in a lot of those movies. So they're not like losing their ass on them or anything. And I think with a movie, with a trilogy like this, the people that are into it down the line, you get, of course you get VOD rentals. And I think that is built into this specifically, right? Like, let's say when Chapter 2 is coming out, there are people that are like, oh, yeah, I want to get caught up with Chapter 1, so they VOD it, they whatever. There's money built in there. People that like the whole thing, eventually down the line, you get a Strangers Trilogy box set. You get all, and Lionsgate is a very good home video business. So, yeah, I think that's absolutely built into it. I just think it's maybe not going to be the home run theatrical hit that maybe, like, they hoped it could be. And we're still left in a situation where 2024 has not had like an outright breakout American produced horror hit like we've had in the past couple of years. Eczema from South Korea is close to 100 million worldwide, so that's great. But we, you know, we've had like Night Swim remains the highest grossing horror movie of the year, I think, at like 54 million American produced. So we don't have that Black Phone, we don't have a Smile, we don't have a Megan this year yet. And you know, so that's really where things are starting to be noticeably like, you know, iffy. That's what I think this highlights, is where we're just still missing what we had the past couple of years to lean on.
So I don't know how many other box office things that you had sort of lined up. I did want to talk briefly about The Fall Guy, and I don't know if that was something that was on your list to discuss here.
It is. And for different reasons. For people that haven't heard, The Fall Guy is about to go to VOD tomorrow already. And this was just after its third weekend in theaters. So we're looking at a situation where a movie has been in theaters for far less than a month, like just over 2 weeks, or 2.5 weeks, a big budget blockbuster, and it's going to VOD already. I have a lot to say about this, but first and foremost, The Fall Guy in its third weekend made $8.45 million domestically, dropped less than 40%. Its audience hold has been good. So I mean, I understand it might not make the money that Universal needed it to make, but it also is still pulling in an audience, and you have retention there. Word of mouth seems to be good. So I am very frustrated by the concept that Universal was just hitting the panic button and putting this on VOD already.
Let's recreate a conversation that you and I had on Slack earlier today. So yes, you basically mentioned that exact thing. You were disappointed. You're like not happy with the fact that this movie is coming to digital already. And I, in an effort to sort of try to play devil's advocate, basically said, if Universal isn't making as much as they hoped from The Fall Guy in theaters, it makes sense for them to just make as much money as possible on video on demand. Because that market, as we've talked about on this podcast a couple times, has been a huge moneymaker for them. That it's, you know, I don't think there are a ton of reports about that because the studio does not publish the numbers exactly. You know, it's kind of like Netflix, where they keep everything under lock and key, basically. But we've talked about that before, like the PVOD, I think it's called, the PVOD numbers, the market for Universal specifically has been really, really good. Like The Northman, for example, the Robert Eggers movie did not do very well in theaters, but apparently was like huge on PVOD. So
yeah, that's what they tell us. Yeah because exactly, that's the problem. Right. There's not a lot of transparency there, but like there was a big report in the New York Times last year, almost exactly a year ago, that Universal has made about $1 billion from VOD since the pandemic. So over like a 3 year span, you know, that's a lot of money, you know, and the thing with VOD is, as we've talked about, is that, you know, theatrical, the cut's about 50% between the studios and the theaters. VOD, it's closer to 80%,
right,
that the studios keep. So there's that. So I'm not arguing against VOD. I think it's nice that we have that window there, because that sort of helps fill the void where, you know, DVD sales have dried up. I don't have an issue with that. I have an issue with, here's where I completely see on an individual basis, Universal going, because to your point, the closer they release VOD to the theatrical release, the less new marketing you have to do.
Yeah, that was the only other point in our Slack conversation that I brought up sort of in that devil's advocate mode was because they have already spent whatever, let's call it $100 million on marketing. Basically, they're benefiting by that by making the movie available on digital now while that marketing campaign is still fresh in people's minds. And that was all I said. And you had some good responses to that. So I just wanted to, sort of tee you up with that and let you go off here for a second.
Yeah. So here's my thing on an individual basis. And look, this is me getting a little soapboxy. Not that I've ever done that on this podcast, but look, I understand from Universal's perspective on this individual basis. Yeah, that makes sense financially, maybe for them. I don't know. They're probably not going to make money on this movie now. They're just sort of like playing damage control. Okay, fine. What you need is you need movie theaters to be here in 5 years. There are a lot of problems we need to address. We need to address the fact that like Regal Cinemas and some of these other movie theaters that people go to in the middle of the country don't really represent the theatrical experience that you and I hold dear. They're kind of falling apart. But the bigger thing is that, yes, during the pandemic, people got super used to watching movies at home, and they got used to the idea that you could have a movie at home in like 2 or 3 weeks. And now people have become so used to that, that that's become the norm, that's become the expectation. You've got to start working against that somehow. We can't keep investing in that as an idea. It used to be 3 months. The reason for theatrical used to be exclusivity. If you want to see that movie, it's going to be in theaters for 3 months. So you do it now or you got to wait. And people don't have that anymore. And now that like home theater stuff is better and this and that, you're losing reasons to go to a theater. And Universal is not helping the case that, you know, I don't know. And yeah, people are going to make accessibility claims and people start yelling, you know, about, well, what if I can't go to a theater, blah, blah, blah. And that it's like some sort of gatekeeping. It's not. This movie will eventually be available at home. But for the economics to work, it really needs to be in theaters for, I would say, at least 45 days, most any major theatrical release. So I don't know. I'm a little mad at Universal here, and I just think this is the wrong, it's short-sighted is the best way that I can put it. And I think that the studios collectively of Hollywood need to look at each other and they need to make some sort of handshake agreement and be like, we can't do stuff like this. You know, I don't know. So for me, that's the big thing. If there's anything that like really disappoints me this weekend, like that's it. Paramount tried to make an original movie, gave it a prime summer release, gave it a good director, gave it a good marketing push. That's commendable. Lionsgate tried to do something interesting with The Strangers. Like that's commendable. Like this is wildly disappointing. Like what Universal is doing with The Fall Guy. So this to me is emblematic of the thinking that needs to change if we want to have a healthy theatrical marketplace in 5 years. So
yeah. Okay. Well, on that note, let's take a break and then we'll be right back.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month?
They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Okay, so I wanted to spend the rest of the show talking about a really fascinating listener email that we got, Ryan. So Melissa in St. Louis wrote in and she said, "Hi, Ben. I enjoy listening to the box office recap every week and I wanted to reach out to you and Ryan and ask, how many movies should the average person go see in a year for a healthy domestic box office? When you talk about the money that needs to be made by a specific movie or the overall industry, I'm always curious how that breaks down to the level of a hypothetical individual audience member. I know there's differing ticket prices and formats and all sorts of other variables, but I appreciate hearing your rough estimate of the average Joe's movie-going quota for a year or even just the summer season. So before we dive into this, Ryan, I just want to say that I find the spirit of this question to be so incredibly generous and nice. It's basically asking,
yeah,
like, what can an individual do to help keep this industry alive, which strikes me as just like such a selfless idea. So I appreciate that. You know,
it is. It's like the Starship Troopers, I'm doing my part thing. It really is like, hey, yeah, that's I appreciated. I'm with you. Like when I read that email that you sent me, I was like, because you asked me, you gave me this a couple days in advance because you're like, you might need to do some math here. And yeah. I was like, but and I did, and we'll get into that. But I will say to this listener, I applaud, given the somber tone of the first half of this podcast, I applaud your like doing my part spirit. I love
it. And to be clear, I don't think that the burden falls on individual people to help keep Hollywood afloat. And there
it does
are a ton of, yeah, there are like a ton of caveats to whatever number that we might arrive at here that factor in, you know, people's financial situations and whether or not they have to pay for childcare to go to the movies and the quality or lack thereof of the theaters near them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, all this stuff that we've been talking about on the show. But Ryan, you did try to crunch some numbers and actually come up with an answer here. So walk me through the steps that you took to try to figure this out and what conclusion you came to.
Yes. And so let me just say, right, to Ben's point, there's a lot to take into account here. And I have, over the past couple of weeks, I've started to really develop this, like, this really, like, almost like, a much needs to change, you know, like, and, but okay, let's say ideal circumstances, blah, blah. And this is talking about the average, right? Understanding that a couple of people, you know, are going to have a harder time and they're going to have families and they're going to have things they need to deal with that makes it harder. But on average, let's talk about this. So what healthy, normal domestic box office would mean and what it means to me and what it means to most analysts I talk to is $10 billion or more domestic box office annually. As I've mentioned a few times on this podcast, 2023, we hit $9 billion, which was good. And that was still well below pre-pandemic normals. So, you know, $10 billion has been that number that a lot of us have been looking at. Like, can we get to $10 billion again? And, you know, because that would be healthy. So what does it take to get us to $10 billion domestic again? All right. With the numbers I have, with the best numbers I have available, the current average ticket price in North America is $10.78. That's average. In some places, it's much more than that, like Tuesdays or discount days where it's much cheaper, but average for the whole year, $10.78. That's the best number I have available. The census data that I'm working with, there's around 331 million people living in the U.S. Currently. Based on some numbers from Statista that I found, about 82% of people go to the movies at least sometimes. Now, a lot of those people, it's not frequent, but so we're just going to basically work with the idea that let's say 80% of the people going to movies. What is the average number of time that roughly 265 million people need to go to the movies to get to $10 billion? Does that all check out? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm with you so far.
Okay, and so what I came to was, using that rough math, if we say 80% of the people living in the U.S., this is accounting for families, all that, I'm just assuming that in that number, you're going to have people bringing kids, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Based on those ticket prices, based on all that, I arrived at about 3.5 movies per year. So you obviously can't go to half a movie per year. So let's say somewhere between 3 and 4 movies per year. If every one of the 80% of people that go to movies at least sometimes went to 3 to 4 movies a year, we could get to that $10 billion domestic box office figure again. So, you know, that was roughly what I found. There's a lot more to be said here, of course. You know, like, look, theater attendance has been down a lot. And you know, there are a lot of people that, you know, the stat that I've seen cited a lot is that 20% of people that used to go to theaters before the pandemic still have not returned at all. Like there is a percentage of the audience that just has not come back. So yeah, there's a lot to be said there. But what I think is interesting is someone who goes to the movies an awful lot is 3 to 4 movies a year sounds very reasonable to me. I don't know how unreasonable that sounds to other people, but it sounds reasonable to me.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, did that number surprise you when you arrived at that? You know, when that number, you know, sort of spat out on the calculator or whatever, What was your immediate sort of gut reaction in terms of like what the feasibility of that looks like for the average person?
It depressed me, actually, because what I'm saying is, like, on paper, it seems so doable. Movie going used to be this thing that used to be a thing that we would just do. It was like, if you had a weekend day or an afternoon, it was just like you and your friends were sitting around. What do we do? I don't know. You want to see what's at the movies? Like, it used to just be more of a thing. Now it's like, it's fallen much further down that list of things people just think to do on average. Mm-hmm. And so I think, like, when I looked at that idea of like 3 to 4 movies a year feels like nothing. But the fact that, like, the industry is struggling so mightily to get to that place, it tells us how bad things are. And, like, that's where I didn't want to come out of this with like a pessimistic take, but, like, that was kind of my take, is that, like, oh wow, this is kind of like really depressing. Yeah, that's where I got to, is that, like, but I think that's where I'm going to go to your original point, that this does not fall on the individuals to prop up Hollywood. This is Hollywood. This is theater owners. This is the industry has to start addressing this problem. And that's my point with the Fall Guy, right? Like, that's not a audience problem. That's not like me wagging fingers at people not going to see the Fall Guy. That's me wagging fingers at Universal not giving audiences the chance to go to the theater or whatever. Like, so this is like a multifaceted industry problem, and it must be tackled. Yeah. And it must be tackled now. That's what I arrived at. Like, when I saw that number, I'm like, this is not an unreasonable number. How the hell do we get back there? You know, so that's where I came to.
Yeah, it's so interesting to think about, because, like, for psychos like you and me, right, we're going to go see a ton of movies a year. And so this doesn't really apply to us. We're on the upper end of that average. We're helping to drag that average, you know, all the way up, basically.
Yeah, look, Ben, I'm the type of psycho that is going to see, that will by Wednesday have seen all 3 Star Wars prequels in theaters within the span of 2 weeks. I didn't need to see Attack of the Clones last week, but I did, you know, like that's what I'm doing. You know, like, that's me doing, like, that. You're right. That's psycho behavior. I'm not asking people to do that.
Yeah. You know, with the caveat that, you know, most of the stuff that comes out in America, we are either going to go see if we're interested or going to go see for work or whatever. I'm wondering if you think that, like, the studios are providing enough reasons for these sort of on the fencers, let's call them, these people who may or may not be willing to hit that 3 to 4 movies a year threshold that we've established. Do you think the studios are actually providing enough reasons for people to actually hit that number? Like, I know we can say, oh man, it's kind of depressing that people won't go see 3 to 4 movies a year, just because the culture has changed so much from when you and I were growing up. And like you said, movies used to just be a given, basically, in your media diet. You would just go to the theaters all the time. But now that we're in the stark reality of this sort of, post the beginning of the pandemic period, where the behavior has changed so drastically, when you look at the cinematic landscape right now of the movies that are coming out in theaters, do you think studios are providing enough reasons for people to go 3 or 4 times a year?
I think they're trying. I think, like, the idea that, like, I've looked at, like, this summer slate, and I'm like, we actually have, if you look at the movies that are coming out this summer, there really is something for everybody. Like, and so I, you know, and I, okay, let's look at this weekend as a microcosm. If a family-friendly original, which people keep saying they want original things, and then they don't show up, and that's a whole other thing, but, like, all right, so a family-friendly original movie starring Ryan Reynolds, big stars, you know, there's that. Okay, so that comes out. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, big franchise blockbuster in its second weekend. The Strangers, a slasher horror movie, franchise horror movie that's like a summer staple, right? The Fall Guy, I know it's a franchise, but ostensibly like an almost original, like, big budget rom-com. Challengers, the sexy tennis movie, like an original thing. Back to Black came out this weekend, which we didn't get a chance to talk about. The Amy Winehouse music biopic didn't do particularly well, but it's there. You know, you have the Blue Angels, even, which we didn't talk about, which is like that documentary that J.J. Abrams produced about like the flight. I don't know a lot about it, but like that was on 227 screens. Civil War is still floating around out there. You look at the movies that are in theaters right now, there is something for everyone. Mm-hmm. So I think Hollywood is trying. I think marketing to people is hard. I think reaching the right people is difficult. I think there's a lot of things, but I do think they're trying. I think the heart of your question lies at, like, what are the reason, right? Okay, well, I think exclusivity used to be the reason. People know Challengers is going to be on Prime Video in a few weeks. People know The Fall Guy is going to be on VOD tomorrow. You know, like, they know that Disney movies are going to be on Disney Plus. Like, we have trained people to just understand that exclusivity isn't a good enough reason anymore. And, you know, and then again, like, some of these other people, it's expensive. I think, like, the other problem is that, like, is the reason good enough to justify that expense? And I think for a lot of people it isn't. So that's another question that needs to be addressed entirely. But yeah, I think, like, that's where it all gets complicated. But I think if you just look at straight up, like, the movies we're producing, are we giving you enough of a reason? And I would argue that Hollywood is at least trying. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not just leaning on Marvel right now. Like, there's a lot of different stuff coming out. And right. So I think, you know, for a guy that loves movies, like, I even look at this, like, even just, like, what is available in theaters right now, I'm like, hey, that's kind of an impressive, nice little slate of things that people could go see. You know, so I don't, you know, I mean, it's a matter of, like, people, I just still can't even tell you how many times I talk to just people that don't do this that are like, I didn't even know that came out, or I don't even know what that is. Mm-hmm. Do you hear stuff like that regularly from people that don't do this?
Yeah, and it's kind of a bummer, but I was reading, I think it was an interview in Deadline with Tom Rothman, who runs Sony right now, and he was talking about the marketing campaign for Anyone But You, which ended up, you know, it started out slow, but ended up being like a pretty decent hit, right? Is that how you would categorize that movie at this point?
Anyone But You was a huge hit. I would categorize it as like a huge relative to its, but like an absolute, like, that was like elemental level of like shocking.
Yeah. Okay. So I think this is the movie that he was talking about. And I think you read at least part of this interview too. So correct me if I'm wrong, Ryan, if I'm speaking out of turn or whatever. I think he was talking about this as the movie that they basically did not really do a ton of advertising on that wasn't digital. Like, he basically like said the advertising campaign for this movie, we met people where they were. We knew this was a movie that was aimed at young people, and so it cost way less for us to market this movie because we bought a bunch of digital ads, and you know, we're marketing on TikTok and all these, you know, all the places that kids are and younger people are, instead of just carpet bombing TV with TV spots that people would either fast forward through or not even be paying attention to in the first place, which is how so many movie studios still do things now. So I thought that was really smart. And I'm, you know, when we're talking about the reasons for people to go hit this number, because my takeaway was the same as yours. It's like, I look at the landscape right now, and I feel like things are actually looking pretty good. And it seems like a pretty good year for movies, even though we're at May 20th. And like, this is supposed to be the period where I kind of like lose my, you know, I fall out of love with movies a little bit because of all the stuff that comes out in the summer, it just becomes depressing. And you're like, oh God, like Transformers 9, are we still doing this or what?
Is like, where you and I just flip flop. This is where I'm just like rubbing my hands together and I'm like, let's go, baby. Like this is like where...
once the, you know, the fall season comes around and everything, and like the quote unquote great movies start coming out, and then my love, my passion is sort of re-energized. What I'm saying is that has not happened to me yet this year because of things like Challengers and because of things like The Fall Guy, which are like on paper, Challengers should not exist, first of all. So I'm glad that it does because I love that movie. And like Fall Guy should be way worse than it was, but I loved that movie. So like, you know, I haven't been jaded yet this year, really. And, you know, we're still in the early days of summer, so that period could very well come, you know, just a couple of weeks from now or whatever.
Sure.
But I found it to be a really healthy sort of scope of what's going on there. And then, yeah, getting back to, are the studios providing reasons for people to come? That interview with Tom Rothman in Deadline, where he's talking about Anyone But You and the digital marketing and stuff, made me think like, okay, maybe more studios need to be thinking this way in terms of in terms of like eventizing, right? That's the thing that everybody always says. You've got to give people reasons to come out and make your movies feel like an event. And I don't think that's really applicable across the board for every movie. It just doesn't make sense that every movie is an event, because if every movie is an event, then nothing is an event and it doesn't matter, right?
But I think I'm with you. It can't be that. Like, that can't be the answer.
Yeah. So I don't know. I was just thinking about that in terms of like all of these issues swirling around that we've been sort of dancing around and talking about directly today all of that is sort of floating around in my head here. And I appreciate Melissa's question because it got me thinking about all of this in a sort of a more macro way than I usually think about it. So I don't know if you had any thoughts about the marketing aspect or anything like that.
But. Well, no, and I think that that's one of those areas, and I do, and I'm with you, that question really did get my gears turning. And also I will say for people that are into this stuff and want some behind the scenes, that interview with Tom Rothman and Deadline. Now look, Tom Rothman is not a guy that like has always deserved a lot of pats on the back, but like that interview, I've rarely agreed with a Hollywood executive more in my life. Some of the stuff he said in that interview got at the heart of things that I really feel. And that seems like a guy that really wants to fix this stuff.
I'm going to link to it in the show notes so people can read it if they're interested.
Yeah. Yeah. So like another good example of what you're talking about, where like not everything needs to be an event. Tarot is a horror movie that came out 3 weeks ago, same weekend as The Fall Guy, a movie we've talked about very little. It was an $8.5 million movie, just like The Strangers. However, it has made $15.4 million domestic and $14.5 million internationally. It's about to be a $30 million movie. And Sony only marketed that digitally. No billboards, no TV spots, nothing. So the marketing campaign was very minimal compared to what a marketing campaign normally would be. And that movie's going to end up making Sony money. Is it going to be a ton of money? No. But because they knew who to market that to, how to market it, and it didn't have to be an event. That is, I think, where the secret sauce lies for some of this stuff, where it's like, you got to sort of, you know, because I think these marketing, where you're automatically saying, if we have a $100 million movie, it has to cost $100 million to market it. I understand for those movies, that's often the case. But like for a $50 million movie, does that have to be the case? I don't know. And I think where that's where some of that stuff, you know, you could trim marketing budgets in some ways if you're creative. And that's where I think maybe, but again, this is where it's a huge, complicated, multifaceted problem. But I do think that there needs to be an acknowledgement from the industry at large that it is a problem, and that if you continue to do things like training people to not go to the movies anymore, you're going to lose the apparatus as it exists. Yeah. You know, yeah. So like that's really what I'm getting at here is like, I'm not saying I have the answers, but I'm saying you've got to understand that there are bigger problems here, and you can't just short-term solutions can't be it. So.
Okay. Well, yes. Thank you once again to Melissa in St. Louis for writing that in. That really got us thinking, and I appreciate the question. Before we go, I want to read a few more 5-star reviews that came in recently. I put the call out for folks to leave us 5 stars and leave a review because that helps sort of get us in front of a bunch of different audiences, you know, people that maybe haven't found the show yet. So Brian 4815 says, great show, lots of ads. Great show. I've been listening since the beginning, since the premiere. It's changed a lot and mostly for the best. I listen every day. I love Ben as the host and everyone else who comes on. My main complaint is the sheer amount of ads, so many. Regarding the ads thing, I just want to pull back the curtain for 1 minute and say that I know that there are a lot of ads on the show. I hope people understand that having them is the only way that we can keep the show going. They help justify the time it takes to put these episodes together every day. And I hope that people don't hold it against us too much. So I just wanted to mention that real quick. Hoyt Mode says, great show. I'm shocked to see these negative reviews. I started listening to the pod a couple months ago and it's good stuff for a daily show. Thank you so much for that. Screw the haters, I will say. I don't know. I don't spend a ton of time reading reviews of the show, but I did. Once I saw that, I was like, negative reviews, what's going on? And I saw some people who don't love the show. So, you know, everybody's entitled to their opinion. One opinion that I appreciated was Scott Adams, who says, my daily go-to for film news / Film Daily is the best daily film podcast, in my opinion. Not only does the show keep me up to date with everything that I need to know about the film and media landscape, but the people who work there are genuinely good people that care. They care about film, they care about each other, and they care about the listener. / Film Daily is where personality, passion, and impeccable knowledge collide. So thank you so much, Scott. I swear the reason that I put this call out for ads, or for reviews rather, was not to fish for compliments, but just to try to help lean into how the algorithm works and get us in front of people that haven't found the show yet and like the sea of podcasts out there. But regardless, reading some of the stuff has warmed my heart. So thank you so much, everybody, for writing in. I really do appreciate it. Yeah. I have a few more banked that I'll read in future episodes.
I will say I'm on the podcast maybe once or twice, you know, once a week, usually maybe twice sometimes. And it is of all the things that I do, it is the thing that people say the most nice things to me about. And it's like, it really is awesome to hear. So like, even like, yeah, I don't know. It's just like, as someone who's just a small part of this, it is like, you know, we're not like not out here. I never am out here fishing for compliments ever. And like when people say nice things to me about this, it's like really, really cool to hear. So like, thank you to anyone who's written in or said, like, thank you so much, guys. It's nice to hear.
Definitely. Okay. So, yeah, you can find me on, let's see, I'm not really on Twitter anymore. I'm on Blue Sky and on Instagram at Ben Pears. Ryan, where can people find you if they want to check you out online?
Pretty much at Ryan Scott Writes on any social platform that most people use. I'm still on Twitter more than I care to be, but I'm also on Blue Sky and Threads a lot these days. So, you know, follow me there if you like.
Okay, cool. All right, well, you can find more about all the stories that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com and linked inside the show notes for this episode. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Once again, that really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make high-quality clothing for a summer wardrobe you'll love, all made right here in the USA. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.